Hello, everyone, and welcome to the XCast X-Files Podwatch, episode 86, covering Via Negativa and Shorekill. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined once again by Baz Greenland. Hi, Baz.
Hiya.
So, Baz, just briefly, hopes, fears, expectations for season 11 as we record this.
What are your thoughts? Okay. where to start? Chris Carter to be good again. No Babylon. And I know we're very good. You're a fan of Babylon. Babylon's one of the worst episodes they ever did. I like the mix. I love the three episodes in between before Babylon, and I think more of that. And just it's just great to see him on screen again. But I also want closure. Gillian Anderson is not going to do a season 12, or at least not for a long, long time. So they cannot end on a cliffhanger. They need to wrap it up in a way that she can move on, and it feels like that's it. Okay, that's done now. Do that. Then it can the mix of comedy and horror and everything else, and I'll be happy.
I'm cautiously optimistic, you know. I think 10 episodes is a reasonable amount to have a good mix.
And that's the trouble. I think, though it was nice, I kind of like it wasn't just mythology. It was a nice mix of the different various styles of the X-Files. I think because it was only 6 episodes, though, it hadn't really got going yet, and it was over.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the point where I was watching my wife, and my wife didn't, you know, I hadn't told her there was only 6 episodes. So when she got to the end, it was like, and that's it. And she went, what? How can it be then? It's only just started. And it was, it was interesting. I definitely enjoyed it. I enjoyed some of them more, except Babylon.
Anyway. The order of business today is Via Negativa and Shorekill. So Via Negativa is episode 7 of season 8. It first aired in December of 2000. It was written by Frank Spotnitz and directed by Tony Wormby. And this is the episode in which Doggett and Skinner work together to investigate a cult leader who kills his victims in their sleep. So Baz, did this one originally make your list for the digital fix? Did you rewatch this one?
It did. I was going to watch this one, but I found I had too many episodes to watch and I cut it, and I wish I hadn't. Because it's really quite good. I really, really enjoyed this one.
Yeah.
I mean, I had seen it once before, a few years back, but I didn't remember much of it, and I was pleasantly surprised at how good it was, actually. It's not the best of the season, but it's a really good, strong episode.
Well, I don't know. This is tied for me with Roadrunners, I think, for my favourite of the season. I think it's an excellent episode. So let's drill down into a couple of aspects of it. So last time out, we talked about Red Rum, and I said that, you know, Gillian Anderson wasn't there much because she'd negotiated a reduced workload for season 8, and this is episode 7, and this is another episode in which Scully is largely absent. She does have a few scenes, but she's not around much, and the reason given is that she's having some kind of tests to do with her pregnancy, I think, isn't it?
It doesn't really make clear, but that's what it alludes to, certainly.
Yeah, it's alluded to, but it's not spelled out. But what that means is we get this pairing of Doggett and Skinner, doesn't it? And Skinner's much more open now after his experience in the forest in Requiem. And he's sort of playing the believer to Doggett's skeptic. And I don't know, I think the combination of the two of them, the two actors, work together quite nicely. It's a nice pairing.
I do. I think like this, and also they do it again in The Gift as well. And I think they are a quite good team. Again, we talked about briefly about season 11 there. That's another thing that Skinner was so utterly wasted in season 11. Mm. Season 10, sorry, not season 11. But also, after all this character journey in season 8... when he's now a believer, that was completely swept under the rug when he came back. But that's kind of a side thing, I guess. But it is nice to see him here to kind of starting to, you know, believe in a kind of, I think, probably quite a natural way. You know, he's been dismissive. He's been the kind of antagonist of Mulder and Scully, then the ally, then kind of been forced to do shady things for cigarette smoking man. He's never really had the chance to quite step into the limelight. And this is kind of his chance. And it's really good to see, because again, Mitch Pileggi and Rob Paltrow are really good together on screen, and it's a really interesting pairing. I think maybe pairing this straight after Red Rum, where again there's very little Scully, particularly if you're trying to assure fans that it's still the X-Files, maybe they could have swapped this for Shorekill and had more Scully in front of the episode than less again, because you get 2 weeks of woe where Gillian Anderson's barely in the show. So that may have turned some fans off, but that aside, it's a really good...
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because by doing that, you'd have ensured that Shorekill and Salvage didn't air back-to-back. They're probably the two weakest episodes of the season, in my view. So you would have split up a bit of tedium there. In addition to Doggett and Skinner, you get a scene, the first scene together of Doggett and the Lone Gunman as well, and that's quite a nice little aside as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really fun, actually. When you walk, there was, they're bombing around the X-Files office, it's quite fun. I mean, the one thing they don't do it here, but one thing they do show a lot of in Season 8 is that Doggett's read all the X-Files. He knows the cases, so when Black Hole turns up, he knows what it is. And so you assume at this point he knows who they are, which is why he doesn't completely throw them out by the collars, but it's still great to, you know, it's great to see Dogger in Mulder's world now, which is, you know, you've had the X-Files, you've had him with Skinner, now you get to see him working with the Lone Gunman as well, which is quite good.
Yeah, I always liked it in the early years of the series, whenever they would have to go through the files to find some obscure reference or something. So like you say, the fact that Doggett is, you know, the whole thing is that he's so well prepared and he does the legwork and stuff. And I really like that aspect of things. That plays into episodes like Roadrunners, I suppose, where he has to look stuff up, doesn't he? And it recurs through the first part of the season, doesn't it? Like you say, that he's read it all.
And later on, I say when Mulder Doggett episodes, right back half of Season 8, when they find the black hole. It's the first time the black hole has been in it for years. But Doggett knows what it is because he's read the case files about the black oil. So it's good. He's prepared. He knows what he's doing. Whether he believes it's a different matter.
The Doggett Skinner pairing reappears again in The Gift, and that's another episode written by Frank Spotnitz. And he did a few good episodes in Season 8. Actually, it seemed to me like, I mean, he's co-credited on a lot of the mythology stuff with Carter.
Yeah,
he did this. He did The Gift. I think it's quite a good episode. He wrote and directed Alone. And I think Medusa is one of his as well. So
yeah, I like all of those, yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a particularly good one. I think Spotnitz really held the fort in a lot of ways in this season. Okay, so in the main, or the climax of the episode, really, you've got this long dream sequence that Doggett's having where he's not sure if he's asleep or he's awake. And I really love that sequence. I love the mood that's created, the atmosphere, some of the imagery is great. I mean, at the moment, I know you and I are both watching the new series of Twin Peaks, so we're thinking a lot about David Lynch, but that sequence is Lynchian in a couple of ways, isn't it? There's one moment where I think it sounds like Doggett's doing the kind of backwards talking that's a bit of a hallmark of Twin Peaks from the Red Room, and then you've got the strong use of the colour blue, which appears in a lot of Lynch's films. So I'd imagine he must have been somebody they were thinking about when they put this together.
Quite possibly, yeah. I mean, Twin Peaks is kind of definitely one of those shows that influenced X-Files as well, as Duchovny was in as well. So yeah, you definitely get, it's a really good sequence. It's very very moody and atmospheric as well.
Yeah, but it's I really like the sort of nervy acting Robert Patrick does. But I mean, that's the end of the episode. But the whole thing's, you know, it's not like massive set pieces or anything. But it's
quite dark and nasty. I mean, and that's what is the interesting thing. There's some quite memorable, quite horrible scenes in it. You mentioned Rogue One as your favourite, and that's some nasty pieces as well. And here, you know, this guy with the guy is eaten by rats, or the homeless guy sinks into the pavement, and his head, the axe cuts into his head, you know. And the attack at the beginning with the two agents, it's very kind of brutal and quite nasty, which is the kind of part of that, you know, X-Files Season 8 does go back to kind of dark and gritty and quite violent at times as well.
Yeah, I think Frank Spotnitz had talked about he had this image of blood coming out of a tube of toothpaste. And he was trying to think of a story to work that into, and this is what he came up with eventually. He came up with a story about sleep and, you know, different planes of consciousness. Yeah, and he felt it just gave him the chance to play with this kind of abstract imagery. And in my view, it works a treat, yeah.
Yeah, and the main villain is good. I'm trying to pronounce Keith's surname, I can't pronounce it, because I remember as well playing Holtz in Angel. I think it was quite good in that, and I think he plays that kind of slightly quite well-spoken, slightly insidious character quite well. I think he does it here as well, which is interesting, that he's not, you know, for this guy who basically controls people through dreams and he's murdering people, he doesn't come across as over-the-top or maniacal. He's very, very play very low-key, but it really works as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think this is a good example of where they turn Scully's absence to their advantage, really, as they would do in a couple of episodes in this season. This probably works better, actually, with Scully not being there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It would have the same case if she'd have been around.
Like The Gift, it gives Doggett something to really get his teeth into, without the shadow of Mulder or Scully, I think, there as well. So, yeah, it's definitely a good episode for him.
All right, so it sounds like thumbs up from both of us to Via Negativa. So any fans deciding on which episodes to skip on a rewatch, I think we'd advise to not skip this one, yeah?
We'd definitely watch it.
Okay, let's see if we think the same about Shawkill then. So Shawkill was the first episode to air in 2001 in January. It's the 8th episode of the season. It was written by Greg Walker and directed by Terence O'Hara. This is the episode, Baz, which begins with a man being murdered inside a police station by a killer with superhuman vision. It's quite a strong opening, actually.
Yeah, it's a good opening. Just skip the rest of the episode. Oh, don't get me harsh. It's not a terrible episode. It's just not a memorable one. It's a bit boring. I think that's trouble. There are bad episodes of the X-Files. This isn't a bad episode of the X-Files. It's just not a particularly interesting one either.
I mean, it's competent, isn't it?
And, yeah. It's got that kind of dark, gritty feel. You can see this fizzing in season two. Season three, I found quite gritty. I think this would definitely sit well in a season three episode. But, you know, if it had been exactly the same but with Mulder and Scully, maybe they might have... Their banter at that point may have heightened a little bit, but I think it would still be a fairly forgettable episode.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the back and forth of the banter, like you say, would have added something to this episode if it had been in an earlier season. It wouldn't have been enough to salvage it, I don't think. I mean, Doggett's quite a funny guy at times, but he's not reliably, you know, quippy like Mulder is.
And maybe that's why they went quite dark and quite nasty, because both Scully and Doggett are quite serious characters. You kind of need them in something quite intense, dealing with something quite intense, which I like that Roadrunners works, particularly. I feel like Medusa works when they're kind of, again, same thing, you know, thing stalking the subway of Boston as well. I like those episodes because it's quite intense and quite dark. This one is just a bit flat. There's just nothing. You're right. The opening is very Terminator-esque, and it's definitely the best bit of the episode. After that, it just becomes a bit of a snooze fest. And the characters, the actors themselves, guest actors, aren't particularly exciting either, unfortunately.
No, I mean, there's one of them. Michael Bowen is his name. He's the guy who played Dwight, and he's a good actor, I think. I mean, he's not great here. He's the guy who turned up later in Breaking Bad in the final series as a villain, and he'd been in a couple of Quentin Tarantino's films.
I did recognise him. I mean, I don't think it was bad here. I don't think any of the characters were bad. It just is probably something from the script.
Yeah, I think the material was just not there.
Yeah, and Kelly Waymire as Tammy as well. Just a bit fish of a character. You kind of supposed to feel sorry for her. You're supposed to feel that she's double-crossed them. So I don't know what you're supposed to feel. I guess you're supposed to feel sorry for her because it's quite a scary situation where Dwight might kill her, maybe, if he finds out she betrayed her, but you don't get enough tension to really kind of engage.
I just didn't feel anything about any of them, is the truth.
I mean, Patrick Kilpatrick, as it was a great name, isn't it? As Randall, the one who can see through walls. He's better because he plays that kind of almost like the Frankenstein monster type goon where he doesn't really have. He looks.
Yeah, he looks the part, definitely.
I think they've got contacts in him as well because of the other vision, which make him slightly off-putting as well. And that's,
yeah,
if I'm being positive here, he looks a bit more interesting as a character because of what he can do. It's a little bit like when he's watching Tammy through the apartment wall when she's getting dressed in the bathroom. It's quite creepy and you kind of, it's a bit more interesting, but there's not enough to certainly salvage the episode.
I mean, some of it's just, I'm not sure the writing is brilliant either, which is that, you know, the fact that he's got superhuman vision and his brother can't see very well at all. I mean, that just seemed...
A very naff crime-fighting team, was
it? I don't know, I don't think that added anything. I don't think it was particularly... I don't know if they were going for dramatic irony. It just didn't really do much for me. Interestingly, Michael Bowen was one of Robert Patrick's mates. You know, he was a fellow biker, and Robert Patrick apparently was very excited to have him on the set for the week. And apparently he was really up for filming this episode, Robert Patrick. I mean, he's very reliable, I think, in these final two seasons. I think there's only one time, which was Lord of the Flies in season 9, when I ever looked at him and I thought, he doesn't really know what to do with this script. I always thought he was very solid and gave as good as he got at all times.
Yeah, I agree. But it's, interesting fact, did you know James Franco's in this episode?
Yeah, I forgot to look out for him, though, this time. I know he appears in the background Yeah, so this must have been, what, a year or two before Franco appeared in Spider-Man, I guess. Probably a year. So, you know, he became quite famous shortly after. What else is there to say about Shawkill? I mean, I would advise first-time viewers of Season 8, only watch this one if you're a completist, I would say.
Yeah, it's got that kind of grit and kind of urban feel of like Season 3 X-Files. It's not terrible. It's fine if you're going to watch all of them, but if you're not going to watch every episode, then don't bother.
Yeah, and I think this stretch might be the weakest part of the season then, because you go from this, Salvage is not particularly good. I mean, Badlar, a lot of people like Badlar. I think it's okay.
Yeah, there's some memorable bits in it, and the guy's creepy with the squeaky wheels, but it's not the strongest one, is it?
I think it's when you get back to about Permanum.
Well, I think from then on, I think it's awesome as five in life at the end of the series. It's just really, because that kickstarts Mulder's return. You had the gift and Medusa, which I like both of those. I know a lot of people don't like Medusa, but I kind of think it's a really good episode for Dog and Scully. It shows it's the last one case together properly, and it shows their dynamic, how much it's improved over the course of the season. And then you get Permanum, and then you get into Mulder's return and so on. I think it's from then on, it's a really exciting end to the rest of the series.
Yeah, and that backstretch, you know, is much more serialised than any other section of the X-Files series.
I would just recommend you watch Permanum through to the end. If you watch season 8, because every episode brings something to it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves, Baz, because tomorrow on the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch, the episodes being discussed are Salvage and Badlar. So my thanks to you, Baz Greenland, and listeners, in the meantime, if you find us on Twitter at @X_cast, we'll be posting any news about the new series as we find it. We're on Facebook too. If you type in XCast, you should find X-Files Basement, the XCast podcast fan group, and we'd love for you to come and join in the discussion there. Okay, that's it for today, listeners. Until next time, trust no one.